disclaimers before I kind of jump into the body of the sermon. One of, and the primary one is, I'm not going to talk about one is left and the other taken, one is taken. The Left Behind series, I mean, I know that is a fairly significant cultural presence, of which I am almost completely unaware, except to know that it exists. I've not read any of the books, so I have nothing much to say about it, and so I'm telling you that I have nothing much to say about it, and am not going to, and really am not even going to get too much into that sensibility of especially the early church, the first 50, 60, 70 years. The early church was really expecting some kind of dramatic, even cosmic event. And it's part of the history of the church that as the generations of the first Christians began to die, the church had to understand that they were in it for the long haul. And so here we are 2,000 years later, still in it for the long haul, that sudden cosmic event that was going to resolve everything and answer all questions didn't seem to happen. Nonetheless, there are still these themes that... they're Advent themes, but they're good for any time of the year anyway, which is watch, stay awake, stay alert. You don't know what's going to happen today. You don't know what's going to happen today. You don't know what's going to happen today. So, you know, don't coast. Don't coast. Pay attention. So that would be, you know, pretty much a distilled Advent sermon in itself. But I want to talk about some of our religious language, because today I think it actually works if we can kind of listen to it in a slightly different way. First thing that kind of struck me today was the words of the collect, which of course were taken from the lesson from Romans, where Paul talks about how we should put aside the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. And in preparation for the Christ who is the judge. And all of that does sound sort of cosmic. And I'm not really sure how many of you, when you hear the works of darkness, that sounds like a fairly, you're committed to evil. And so stop being committed to evil. And for some of you, that may be true. That's a joke. You're supposed to. but probably not. And so how do we take this language, the works of darkness, the armor of light, Christ as judge? And I think without too much work, all of these things become sort of understandable as things that we do all the time. And what I'm thinking about is the works of darkness are not so much evil as they are unconscious. That there is, and I will be talking more about this, there is, again, a kind of surface to our lives. We go along on the surface sort of is calibrated differently, the surface that we live on with our families, maybe a little different than the we live with our co-workers. Nonetheless, there's a surface, and the surface, of course, that we live with in relation to ourselves. And the works of darkness simply, I would say, have to do with not wanting to know what's beneath the surface. Not wanting to know what is beneath the surface. And the work of light, on the other hand, is a kind of commitment, a commitment of the heart, saying, I do want to understand what's going on beneath the surface. I don't want to just keep living out the same patterns in my family year after year. I don't want to just keep dealing with symptoms. I want to get down. I don't want to just keep wrestling with the same anxieties in myself year after year. And believe me, I mean, at some point in your life, you really can say year after year after year, and you realize you've been kind of wrestling with some things for decades. What's the story? Well, the context for thinking about this I talked about it a couple weeks ago when I spoke about the everyday apocalypse. Remember that word apocalypse? How it doesn't mean the end of the world, it means uncovering. And that there is an uncovering that goes on all the time. And remember, I also put that apocalyptic sense, that uncovering, I put it in the context of that story in the Garden of Eden, which I'll say it again. It's not a literal story, but it's a very provocative set of images about what it means to be human and what it means to have a human's mind and heart, what it's like for human beings to get scared. And the first thing that happens in that story is when they think they've done something wrong, they hide and they cover their nakedness. They hide and they cover up. And I take those as enduring and pervasive features of our human experience. We hide from each other. And it doesn't mean that all of us have terrible, deep, dark, scandalous secrets that we're sort of brooding over like some bad egg. It just means that as we grow up, there is a tendency that all of us have to keep part of ourselves in the darkness. Or let's just look at families. This is a family time, Thanksgiving, Christmas. We're sort of immersed in families. Families talk about some things and don't talk about other things. And if you pay attention, you can kind of watch the way the conversation starts to come. Oh, here we go. We're going to talk about it. Oh, no, we're not. And this goes on not just for generations. I mean, it goes on for centuries, I think, really, as emotional truth gets passed down through. And so families have things they're anxious about, and you don't talk about them. But you might really need to talk about them. I think we're both curious and kind of fascinated, but we're also apprehensive. And I hope all of us at some point in our lives have the experience of the true uncovering that comes from a place of love, where you're with a friend, or you're with a spouse, or you're with a therapist, or you're alone with God, and the sense comes over you that there is nothing in your heart that you need to run away from, that there is nothing in your heart. It may be painful. You may say, I wish I hadn't done that. But you don't need to disown your own self. You can stand in the truth of your whole life. And it's not going to be the whole truth, but it may be more of the truth than you've ever opened yourself up to. You stand in the truth of your own life, and you're not afraid, and you're not ashamed, and you don't run away, and you know you're accepted. That's the true uncovering. That's the apocalypse that Jesus talked about. That's the apocalypse that I think I want to encourage us to sort of open our hearts to during Lent. This apocalypse, that's the apocalypse where he said, blessed are you if you take no offense at me. Blessed are you if in the uncovering of love, you don't get scared and think you're at risk, and so treat me as a danger, which is what people did. Now, why would they do that? Well, of course, we know that most of the time, in most of our experiences, uncovering is not guided by love. Most of the uncovering that we experience in our public life, and a lot of it that we experience in our family life, and I would raise my hand as often a perpetrator of that. I'm thinking of what it's like to be 18 and sort of become full of yourself and aware of family dynamics. And I want to I'm tired of this family hypocrisy. I want to tell the truth. And of course, you know, it led to a series, if not years, of rather awkward Thanksgivings and Christmases. You know, as you less than complete skill, you do the uncovering. But there is a really malevolent uncovering. And you can kind of tell the difference. If the uncovering is looking for somebody to blame, that's not God's uncovering. That's not the true uncovering. That's the uncovering of the accuser. That's hostile. That's malevolent uncovering. Political parties try to do it to each other. We do it to each other all the time, where we're trying to get the dirt on somebody. I mean, most of the media that we now are surrounded with, I mean, how much of our media are devoted to uncovering dirt, uncovering scandal? Let's bring it. But the truth, this is just to humiliate, to shame, to judge, to get power over. That's never the apocalypse. It's never the uncovering that Jesus is about. It's always for our own good. It's always, here, let me show you more of the story so that you can maybe make better choices. If you know more, if you understand more, if your heart sees more, maybe you can make better choices. The light is your friend. And when we hear this language of Christ the judge, what if, I mean, the judge, am I guilty, am I sin? What if the judge is an inner faculty of discernment? What if when we speak of Christ as the judge, what if we're talking about that place within ourselves where we are connected to the life and presence and Spirit of God such that that speaks to our mind and heart, and we can actually tell the difference between a path that's full of life and one that's shallow or dead. We can tell the difference between what's good for us to pursue and what is lifeless. The inner faculty of discernment. And as we're going to hear in our preface today too, I like the preface of Advent where it speaks about Christ coming in majesty. And then it says, we may without shame or fear rejoice to behold his appearing. Again, you can hear that as a cosmic event, like Jesus is going to be in the sky. Or you can hear that as an inner event, where do you rejoice without shame or fear when the presence of Christ makes itself known in your heart? And do you want to run away from that presence because you think you're going to be judged and humiliated by it? Or do you welcome that presence as the only thing that's going to set you free in your life? The only thing that's going to set you free. Think of Advent. Think of Advent in its apocalyptic dimension. The little apocalypse of every day. The little uncoverings of every day. As posing a primary question to us. Do you consider the light to be your friend? Or do you run away from it? Do you want to know the truth? Or are you running away from it? Do you think the truth is going to make you feel ashamed? Or do you think the truth is going to remind you of how deeply you are actually loved? That's the dance we do. That's the dance we do in Advent. Our relationship to the light. And Jesus said, oh, the light is your friend. The light will set you free. The truth will set you free. If you could only know your own story, you would know how deeply you are loved. And if you could only know the story of all the people around you, your heart would open and you would feel compassion. One last word, that wonderful line from Isaiah. Nations shall beat their swords into plowshares. Everything we do can be a sword. What you understand about your family members can be a sword, and you can use it as a weapon, and you can use it to blame, and you can use it to hurt, or it can be a plow. It can be used to cultivate and to make things fruitful and and to make things grow and to bring people together. Everything can be used as a sword or as a plow. Beat your swords into plowshares. The light will show you how to make use of your gifts, who you are, and know that in all our relationships, we can use what we know, who we are. We can use our money, our education, our appearance, our experience, our understanding. We can use them all as swords. Beat them into plows that the earth might be fruitful. That the earth might be fruitful. Take your weapons and make of them something that will bring us together. And don't be afraid of the light. It is your deed.